In sweet company, I am home at last. What do you think of when you think of home? Is it a place? A smell? A feeling? A person or people? Something else? When I think of home, there are two things that come immediately to mind. The first is a memory of being very small, maybe two or three, standing at the front door with my mom, waving to my dad as he leaves for work. There's warmth, there's connection, there is nurturing in this memory, a feeling of being held and cared for as a small child, of having my needs met, of getting through a moment of sadness because I wasn't alone. The second thing that comes to mind is a more adult feeling, a comfort. I am home when I can feel the comfort of being able to be completely myself. This second response is not connected, unfortunately, to my mom or dad or my childhood memories, but with people I call chosen family, because they are the people with whom I have built trust and care over many, many years. We have also built the skill and the trust to deepen our relationship so that each of us can shift what's at the center of that relationship from ourselves to the string that binds us. The shift is crucial to understand if we're going to talk about what it means to be a people of belonging, which is this month's theme, because part of being part of belonging has to do with the cord that's created when the numerous strings that we are played at the same time, like when a guitar is strummed, or with the arc that's created when the strings are played in a particular order, like the beautiful cello we heard earlier. Regardless of the instrument or how it's played, the strings are bound together to form a whole, created to work with a purpose together. I belong to that chosen family, and those people belong to me because of what we have built together. I am theirs. They are mine. In his book about the history and current status of liberal religion called Faith Without Certainty, the Reverend Dr. Paul Raiser writes about our culture's tension between individualism and group identity, how it impacts liberal religious faith communities. Raiser claims that, quote, our liberal modern understanding of ourselves as autonomous individuals is an illusion. The truth, he says, is that we don't first exist as individuals who then form social groups. The group always comes first. As individuals, our identities are always formed in relation to a particular social context. We are social beings through and through. He also writes that we say we want stronger communities, yet we seem afraid to let go of the individualist orientation that stands in the way. A shared belief in autonomous individualism is a poor foundation on which to build a deeper sense of community. In other words, if we're just looking out for ourselves, community isn't going to just spring up. It seems to me that in today's society, it's more important to people that they be afforded these individual freedoms of theirs, that they think about the greater good only once they're comfortable in those freedoms. This feels to me like a privilege afforded to those in the dominant culture who have the resources to be self-reliant and free. There's a lack of emphasis on our interdependence that's due at least in part to that priority we give to our individualism. And I think this is one of the factors that have contributed to the deepening polarization we're experiencing in public life. We forget that we belong not just to ourselves, but to each other. Who I am is a product of both nature and nurture. I'm part of the universe because the atoms I'm made up of have been recycled through me and many other parts of that universe. I'm a woman because of what I know intrinsically about myself. And I'm an ecologist because someone awakened a curiosity in me about how the natural world works. And I'm a minister because of a set of experiences with other humans that have allowed me to hear and follow the call to that work, widening circles. I am connected to everything that is around me, and I belong to all of the people that have played a role in getting me to where I am right now. In 1972, a school superintendent named Robert McNeish wrote a piece called Teamwork Lessons from the Geese. This is an excerpt. This fall, when you see geese heading south for the winter, flying along in a V formation, you might consider what science has discovered as to why they fly that way. As each bird flaps its wings, it creates uplift for the bird immediately following. By flying in V formation, the whole flock adds at least 71% greater flying range than if each bird flew on its own. When a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of trying to go it alone and quickly gets back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird in front. When the head goose gets tired, it rotates back in the wing and another goose flies point. Geese honk from behind to encourage those up front to keep up their speed. I carry with me the experiences of growing up in family, of learning how to be with friends and colleagues and neighbors, of learning about being in the world in my school and in the church of my childhood. Of course, I exist as an individual, but that is nowhere near the whole of my identity. I'm part of so many groups that it's rare for me to think of myself as just my own. I belong to all the people who are flying with me, who create uplift for me to follow, who rotate in and out of leadership with me, who support me when I get tired. When I say this, what I'm talking about is relationships of reciprocity and accountability. We give to each other with awareness and gratitude for our interdependence. That's the reciprocity. And we keep each other true to our purpose and our goals. That's our accountability. I'm accountable to that chosen family, to my own child, to my colleagues, to you all, to the Madison Faith community, to the people this congregation and that faith community serve that I don't even know yet, to our earth home. Because I also belong to the people and the beings for whom I create uplift to follow, who I support when they get tired. Reciprocity, awareness, and gratitude go both ways, go all the ways, like that string. The author Douglas Steer wrote, "The ancient question, who am I, inevitably leads to a deeper one. Whose am I? Because there is no identity outside of relationship. You cannot be a person by yourself. To ask whose am I is to extend the question far beyond the little self-absorbed self and wonder, who needs you? Who loves you? To whom are you accountable? To whom do you answer? Whose life is altered by your choices? With whose life is your own bound up inextricably in obvious or invisible ways?" When we can recognize how deeply our lives are bound up with the lives of each other, we are more able to see and eventually to anticipate the impacts of our words and our actions on each other. This pushes the idea of whose am I beyond our immediate relationships. This weekend, a group of Rebers and people from First Unitarian Society met here for the opening retreat for Beloved Conversations, a program focusing on race and ethnicity in our two congregations. Thomas, as well as being a worship associate, is one of the facilitators for the program here at REEB, and he shared his observation with me during the retreat that we who use seem to have a tendency to think of ourselves as outside the dominant culture. This made sense to me. I tend to think of us as countercultural, as pushing back always at the false narrative of the dominant culture. And then Thomas said that that means we place ourselves outside the culture of white supremacy. If we accept as true, he says, that we are in relationship with the world, then we are also in relationship with white supremacy culture, and we're not independent of it. It has an influence on us, whether we recognize it or not. So what happens when we shift to remembering that we're part of that culture, that we are not set apart, that we belong to it, and it belongs to us? Remember what happened when you tugged on the string? It pulled on someone else. So finally, in these layers of belonging that I'm laying out here, I'm also accountable to communities that I'm not directly part of, because my actions and my choices have impacts that ripple out. Being in relationship with white supremacy culture, as Thomas said, calls me to work to dismantle that culture. That's my part in it. And that requires that I trace the ways that I follow the string and find how it connects me to those marginalized communities and how they connect me to them. Being in relationship means taking time to reflect on whose we are. The Reverend Dr. Mark Morrison Reed, a Black UU scholar and historian, wrote, "The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind us each to all. There is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our own lives and the lives of others. Once felt, it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church," he writes, "that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed." Over the course of this month, we're going to be exploring different ways of belonging, different aspects of that belonging to each other and to ourselves. May it be so. May we be so.